people literally crawling up walls and on ceilings, demonically possessed cats, and why your teenager is probably not possessed. Most importantly, how to engage in the spiritual battle in your everyday life. Today's episode is going to blow your mind on The Chris Stefanik Show. Welcome to The Chris Stefanik Show. We're here every week to give you the tools and inspiration you need, because we love you. We really do. I mean that. I'm not just saying that. To live your everyday life with joy. I want to thank you, our missionaries of joy. It's because of you that this mission happens. You're changing lives with every episode. If you want daily inspiration, click below this video and join the family of people that every day gets the Daily Anchor in their inbox. It's from us, a gift for free. No strings attached at all. And this episode is sponsored in part by EWTN. You can catch this and so much more good stuff streaming on EWTN+. Link is below in the show notes. Dave Van Vickle is an incredible man of God, and he's been involved in exorcism ministry since he was a high school teenager, which is an unusual story. Let's dive in now. Dave Van Vickle. Good to have you back, man. Yeah. Fellow Steubenville grad, again, wearing my socks in your honor.
I love it.
2006. Wait, what year did I graduate? 98. I'm old. Oh, man. How did you get into exorcism ministry? Like, graduate from Steubenville, did you apply for the job?
It was before I went to Steubenville, actually.
Are you serious?
Believe it or not, I was young when I started helping a priest who, was an exorcist. So I was young when I had my conversion. Like, I gave my life to the Lord when I was 14.
Yeah.
I had a very serious prayer life at that time, and my spiritual director at the time, I didn't know it, but he was, like, the exorcist for the diocese I was in, and I started helping him when I was in high school, actually, which is ridiculous, and it should not happen. But, I would say, like, on the balance of...
This is before safe environment policies
existed. Yeah, sure, right.
Bring the kids to the exorcisms. Yeah.
Well, it was, like, I think, in his defense, like, the balance between holiness and prudence was completely into holiness. Like, he had no prudence at all.
Yeah.
But he also knew me. Like, I went to confession to him every week and knew, you know, the state of my soul and everything. And,
wow.
And I was serious about my faith when I was in high school, but... obviously, it shouldn't happen, but...
No, but what did it look like for you to assist with exorcisms at a...
Yeah.
Like, so priests need lay people to help?
Well,
like,
they don't need... It depends. It's different in every diocese. It's different in every diocese. But yeah, oftentimes there are lay people there to help. They might be there to help keep the safety, right, of the victim. Because sometimes the victims will be very violent to themselves or to the priest, it could be.
So you have to physically restrain people?
Sometimes. Now, that's... Most places are, like when I'm helping a diocese, like, set up a team now, I say, like, you know, you really want, like, a police officer to do this, not just some kid, you know?
Yeah.
Because there's liability there and things like that. But, but what people think about exorcism is that it's kind of like the work of the priest, and that's not a great way to understand it. Most of the work is on the point of the victim, right? And so what I was usually there for is to accompany those people and to evangelize them and to, like, try to get them outside of the exorcisms to, like, live a Christian life so that they could cooperate with the grace of the exorcism. So that was most of my job.
Really?
Yeah. And I did a lot of intakes, so I would do, like, a lot of, like, people would call and I would decide, like, okay, well, who should here see an exorcist? Who is, you know, what's going on here? Yeah, that kind of thing.
So you got involved in that whole, like, an intake and evaluating people?
Yeah, I've done kind of everything that there is to do, other than I'm not a priest.
So you do, like, the administrative part of exorcisms?
Yeah. It's,
Hey there, I just want to share something really important with you guys real quick. You know what's crazy? This entire show, every episode, every conversation, every life changed, only happens because of our supporters. The Chris Stefanik Show is powered by people like you. People who believe in spreading the joy of the gospel. Now here's the deal. Each year we reach millions of people, but there are millions more that have not received not just the good, but the great news of the gospel. We want to reach those people, walk with them, and that's where you come in. When you become a monthly donor, a missionary of joy, you're not just donating, you're actually making this mission possible. You're helping us bring the hope, truth, and joy of the gospel to a world that desperately needs it. And that's not all. As a missionary of joy, you get exclusive access to all our video series, including Living Joy, Rise, Renewed, Fearless, and more. You get exclusive early access to new releases. You get Monday motivation texts direct from me. And you get access to our daily anchor, daily inspiration to fuel your faith. The truth is, the gospel is too good to keep to ourselves. If this show or our work has encouraged you, challenged you, or strengthened your faith, imagine how many more lives we can change together. Don't just watch the mission, fuel it. Click the link below and become a monthly donor today. It'll be the best investment you make this year. And that grew over the years to where you were doing that, like from teenage years until like for 20, 25 years. How long have you been?
A long time, yeah. About 20 years. And what I would say is, like, it ebbed and flowed. I never really wanted to do it. So, like, what would happen is, basically what happened is in 1998, Pope John Paul issued a motu proprio saying, look, every diocese needs an exorcist.
Wow.
Well, no one knew how to do. At the time I was helping, there was like 9 in all of North America.
Nine exorcists, that's it.
Yeah. Most of them you wouldn't call, like, there's two different types of exorcists. One would be called a stable exorcist. One would be called, I can't remember the name for the other one, but it's not stable. Like, there's somebody who
unstable person.
No, they're appointed for like one case or something. You
okay,
know?
Okay.
Or they might work for several dioceses, you know, so they're not like the diocesan exorcist.
Crazy.
So Pope John Paul issues a motu proprio in 1998 saying everybody needs to appoint an exorcist. But no one had, I mean, there weren't schools at that time. There was one school in Rome, but it was brand new. There weren't really books. Father Gabriel Morth had a few books out, but that was it. So most people didn't know what they were getting into. And so every time I'd move to a diocese, that, you know, they'd ask me to help out. And then sometimes I would, sometimes I wouldn't. But for the most part, you know, if I had the time, I would do it.
Yeah.
And then since Amber passed away, I stopped because I just feel like I put my time in. It's too emotional for me. And, you know,
Yeah. So you're accompanying people who are possessed. You're hanging out with these people.
Yeah, see, what you don't understand, okay, so this is what no one understands about this ministry, is that these people, possessed people are not the people you know, like, in our bubble that we live in, right? Like, they come from far outside the kingdom, okay? So, like, these are people usually who sought out possession, right? They wanted the powers of evil.
Really?
They knew what they were getting, yes, usually.
In what way?
They might be a witch, they might be a Satanist. And they want specifically this relationship with a demon in a certain sense, right?
And then they change their mind once it begins.
Then they change their mind. Yeah, they might get cancer, or they might be old, or they might, you know. The demon treats them very well at the beginning, and then once abuses them terribly. And so then they might say, like, okay, I need help. Well, these people leave their families. They leave sometimes their jobs. They leave their groups, right? And so they have no one. And so, like, at times, even I've even had them living with, like, Amber and I had one living with us for a while.
Are you kidding?
No. I mean, you can imagine, like.
No, I can't. I literally can't,
like,
imagine.
Imagine saying that to your wife, like, hey.
Yeah.
I saw my boss coming home for dinner.
There's two guests, like, who are going to come stay with us. It looks like one.
Right. Right. Yeah.
What's it? I'm.
They need family, right? So remember in the scriptures when the Gerasene demoniac, there's that weird part where he says, I want to go with you to Jesus. And Jesus says, no, go back to your family, right? Family is a really important part of this whole process. And so oftentimes what we've done is provided family for these people, right? Is they don't have a place to go for holidays. They don't have things like that. And so we've provided a family for them.
That's profoundly beautiful.
It is. Mean, it's
leper that
very, it's exactly right. It is very difficult. Very difficult. I mean, yeah.
What's it look like when there's when you said, like, the demon will treat the person well? What's that mean? And then treat them horribly. What's that mean?
Yeah. I mean, without talking about specific cases, because I don't want to get in trouble, but basically, like, you know, I remember one case, like, he was just so talented. And every time he would think something like, gosh, I wish I could get this job, but that guy has it. All of a sudden, that guy would get fired or something like that, and then he would get the job. Or he was one of these guys was a semi-pro soccer player. He was on the second string, and he was like, oh, I wish this person would break his leg. The next day, he'd break his leg. So, like, they would give him these favors, right? But once they know that they have that relationship, like, what they think is solidified, then they treat them horribly, and in which case their life becomes just a complete nightmare, right?
Like,
they think they're going crazy. Like? They could be physically abused. They could be they're constantly mentally abused all the time, right? They're constantly having thoughts that aren't theirs. Filling their mind. They've messed around with their cogitative process, so, like, the way they evaluate good and bad and things like that. They drive them far away from people, anyone who would love them. So they isolate them.
Wow.
Yeah, it's terrible.
And they had experienced these thought processes, and were they able to differentiate themselves from the thoughts that were coming into them from the demon?
Ish. Sometimes they're able to. Sometimes they know that there's an entity in them. Sometimes they think they're going crazy. And we have to determine that without a shadow of doubt before we would move forward with any treatment that would be spiritual.
So what's a family meal look like with one of these people and your kids are there?
It's odd, right? I remember my kids asking me, you know, one of the things we did during Christmas is like, you know, the kids will kiss the baby Jesus. And, you know, if you've had any experience in exorcism, demons despise the incarnation, right? They, more than anything on earth, they hate the incarnation. They'll talk about it all the time, the flesh of Jesus Christ. And so I remember, you know, this poor woman just screaming, you know, the F word, and my kids being like really disturbed by it. But they understood, right? I mean, they kind of understand a little bit, as much as they could at whatever age they were, that she was struggling and she just needed help. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So I mean, that's just a weird. Wow. Yeah.
Would it be the kind of thing where it's managed most of the time, but then comes out in manifestations like?
Yeah. Yeah.
But for most of the time, they're just looking like normal people. Like
yeah, yeah.
Like you could be in the grocery store, but yeah, someone who's possessed and not know it.
Absolutely, yeah. It falls on a spectrum for sure. Yeah, and for the most part, it's yeah. You have crisis points like that'll happen, and something will tick the demon off, right? Or oftentimes they'll try to ruin nice things. So like, they have a birthday or something like that, and the demons will like you know mess them up on that day just to give them a bad day.
Just because they're mean.
Yeah, they're bullies. They're bullies.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, it's hard. You have to be really, really vulnerable, and you have to be very careful, and, you know, you have to be just willing to love a person that is almost unlovable, right? Like, it's very difficult.
Now, to help people watching who think, huh, I think my teenager is possessed, and I'm thinking, like, hey, most teenagers act possessed at time in their teenage years.
Right.
There's a spectrum of of experiences of being attacked by the evil one. Right.
And
a lot of them are just we can confuse natural experiences with the devil. Right. But there's temptation, which is natural but can have demonic interaction. There's oppression, obsession.
Possession,
which is so rare.
So rare and so diagnosable. Like, it's not something we're guessing about.
No. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Before we get to how that's diagnosed, what are the other levels of spiritual combat that people have to deal with that that we all often overlook? Like, okay, maybe the battle is natural.
Yeah.
But there's a spiritual component, but we don't have to think about that. We could just engage it on a natural level, and the devil loses his foothold, right? So, like, what are the levels of combat?
I think that's the best way to respond always, is to remember, like, regardless of whether a temptation is from the world or from the devil, we're usually going to respond the same, right? Yeah. We're going to pray, and we're going to move, and we're going to, you know, do the things that we need to do. So that's important. So temptation would be the thing that we all fall under. Like, there's nothing – it's part of humanity. Like, there's no exorcism that's going to stop temptation, right? Like, just part of being human. But in extraordinary cases, then we would say, in America particularly, we would divide it up into usually four different categories. And one would be oppression. And oppression would be like Job, the story of Job. So his property, his health. It's usually their health. Okay. It's very difficult to diagnose, very difficult to treat, because what's the difference between a demonic oppression and just a series of bad days or something? Like, I mean, someone might look at my life and be like, oh, that's an oppression, you know?
Yeah.
But it wasn't, you know? And in oppression, what they're trying to do is just, in all the cases, they're trying to get them to just doubt God's goodness, you know. We always go back to the garden, you know, and we want to learn about the devil. At some point, we might call it obsession, when they start to really affect their mind, right? They're trying to really mess with the way that they think and they process thought and those kinds of things. And it usually manifests as a voice in their head.
A literal audible voice inside
their head? Yeah, they think it's, they think so. And the classical definition would be a prolonged and intense temptation. Now, we all have had those, right? But what I mean is, like, someone, like, they maybe can't eat, they can't sleep, right? It's so strong, they don't know what to do. And it's usually very odd. So, for instance, this idea, like, I'm going to kill my best friend, okay? And we've all been angry enough that we want to kill, right?
Right.
But these people, they can't stop thinking about it. And it's not even that the devil wants them to kill their best friend. It's that he wants them to despair. And so that thought will go so deeply into their mind that eventually he'll kind of present another option. Like, I can take this away from you if you do this. And he'll gain more and more control. And at some point, we don't know exactly when, but he can gain so much control, we would call that possession. And that's when they're able to, like, you know, do the things in the movies.
Now, a lot of this stuff can, a lot of those experiences subjectively can sound like OCD, schizophrenia.
Sure.
Part of your job is the intake coordinator.
Sure.
Because, I mean, there's so many more people who think they're possessed than are.
Than are, right.
Like, what percent of people who present end up going to the next level and getting exorcisms?
Less than one.
Less than 1%.
Yeah. So what I would say is, usually what, the way I say it is, like, 80% of the people, it's probably, like, some sort of mental illness, okay? And we would allow professionals to take care of that. Like, they would diagnose that, not us, right? I'm not a professional at all with that kind of thing. I'd say another 10% would be drugs. It's really hard because, like, if you're doing hallucinogenics or something like mushrooms or something like that, it can really seem like you're possessed, okay? Wow. Another 10% might be drugs, so we're at 90. I'd say another 5% is like the zealous Catholic who thinks, like, I don't know, they catch their son looking at pornography or something like that, and they're like, well, it must be possession, right?
And, right. Externalize all your dysfunction.
Right.
Blame the devil.
Right,
yeah.
Right. Then I'd say the last 5% is probably the devil. It's probably real. But maybe only 1% or 2% warrants a visit to an exorcist. You know, that's been my experience of doing intakes.
Okay.
It's very rare. Very rare.
Yeah. So, but there's objective criteria for that phase. What is the objective criteria?
So technically, what the church wants you to see is 4 signs of possession before proceeding with an exorcism. So those would be preternatural physical abilities like levitation or super strength, okay? It would be knowledge of unlearned languages, clairvoyance, which is usually the one they like the most. Demons love clairvoyance.
What's clairvoyance?
They know things they shouldn't know. And so
why do they love that the most?
I don't know. I think they like to kind of impress you a little bit. It's very impressive to them. Like, oh, and it's very personal, okay? So they'll say, like, oh, maybe something will happen in the middle of the night, and they'll say, did you like it when I woke you up last night? Or something like that, you know? And you're like, oh, that was you or something.
Ew.
Yeah, exactly.
Sorry, just got the EBGs.
Exactly, right.
But they like the jerks, like giving you the EBGs.
That's exactly what they want to do, right?
Yeah, okay.
And then the last would be, and the most common would be an aversion to the sacred. And so they're terrified of priests. They're terrified of sacramentals. Holy water burns them.
That's right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, that's what's funny is that, like, you know, demons are absolutely terrified of priests. Like, they would do anything they can to get away from them. And they constantly talk about how much they despise, you know, their hands, and because that's where Jesus comes from. And they're terrified of priests.
That's a beautiful thought about the priest's hands.
It is. I'm so thankful. The thing I'm most thankful about being in that ministry is seeing in persona Christi played out in such a real way, right? Like
that's awesome.
Physical way. Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. I want to say this to not to give in to, you know, just
curiosity.
Cool stories and curiosity, but to glorify God, because I think sometimes God allows the evil one to do these manifestations
so that he can show
to
his power.
Bolster the faith of people that the spiritual realm is real.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know how else to ask this. Can you share some freaky stories?
Yeah. I mean, I what I would say too is, like, along your lines is that in 20 years of witnessing exorcisms, which is a long time, right?
Yeah.
I have never once walked away and been like, man, the devil's really powerful. I've always walked away and been like, man, I am so thankful for the priesthood and for Mary and for my guardian angel.
That's
and
awesome. Things.
Yeah. Yeah, sure, of course. Like, you know, there have been moments where the saints become really involved in our lives. And one story I tell often is that this young guy was coming in for an intake. He was 18 years old. And his uncles were these huge firefighters, and they had him arm in arm, and he was just foaming at the mouth, screaming the F word. And I felt so bad for this kid. And so I was trying to determine, like, is this mental illness? What is this? Yeah. You know, and just praying. And I was asking him these questions, and I was asking him, like, well, do you like sports? And he started to calm down, and he was like, yeah, I love sports. You know, I was going to be a Division I football player, but now this has happened. And who knows? I don't even know if I'll get to go to college, you know? And I was like, well, we're going to see if we can help you. And just kind of out of the blue, like, I'll usually ask, like, a zinger. And I was like, Jonathan, do you know how much God loves you? And he was on a couch, like, between his uncles, like, 20 feet away. And before I could even put my hands up, he had escaped from his uncles. He grabbed this vase and broke it, and he had it up to my throat. Okay. And all of a sudden, he, like, looked above me, and his eyes just, like, were in terror. And I could tell it was the demon. It wasn't this kid, you know. Like, wow. I've been doing it long enough to know. And he said, if that little Dago from Luca weren't behind you, I'd have killed you 3 seconds ago. And I was like, what? Well, eventually we did some more tests and we admitted him for exorcism. And every time I'd walk in,
little who?
This little Dago from Luca. I had no idea who he was talking about. I was like, thanks, whoever this is, you know.
You gotta be kidding me.
So every time I'd walk in for an exorcism for him, he would start screaming about this little girl from Luca that would come in with me. Finally, after 4 weeks, the exorcist said, I demand you tell me who this is. And he said, I'll never say her name. I'll never say her name, you know. After 10 minutes of commanding him through gritted teeth, he said, Gemma Galgani. Gemma Galgani.
That's beautiful, man.
Yeah, say Gemma. And I thought, like, wow, I have no idea why. Like, God has, like, sent her to help me. Or
do you have a devotion to her?
I didn't before. I had no idea who she was.
You're kidding me, man.
I mean, my family has some roots in Luca, but I don't know if that was it. Or if God was just like, well, you really got to help this guy, right? Or something like that. Or, oh, man, I don't know.
That's so cool.
But, like, moments like that where you're like, wow, that is really
beautiful.
Yeah, it can't be. Like, there's no mental illness that does stuff like that.
No,
right?
No, totally. You
know, right, yeah. So there's things like that. I would say, like,
have you seen levitation or other languages?
I've seen all of those things. One of the extras that I assisted, he was, like, a language scholar.
Yeah.
And so he worked for the Vatican for a long time. And I remember one time he was down in the islands, and this kid came out of the jungle with his family. He was 8 years old. He looked like he had never – he looked like he was in a National Geographic magazine, like he had never even been in a house.
Wow.
And this exorcist questioned him, and he would question. He had 12 questions he would ask everyone, and he asked them in all different languages, all 12 different languages. This kid answered perfectly in every language back the way he would ask it. And it was like, yeah, it was just kind of this amazing thing to see. Clairvoyance is the one that you see constantly, and I'll give you kind of an embarrassing story with clairvoyance. Like, when I was 5 years old, my dad took me to the Natural History Museum, and there was this little yellow rubber pterodactyl, and I asked him if I could have it, and he said no.
You stole it.
And I stole it. It is very common for them to bring it up during an exorcism. Like, remember when we stole that pterodactyl?
You got to be kidding
me. I'm absolutely serious.
They'll say when we stole the pterodactyl.
Yeah, you remember when we stole that pterodactyl? And I'll be like, I have to be like, I'm 40 now. I was 5. Like, just so everyone knows, this wasn't last week, you know, like. It's very embarrassing, yeah. But, yeah, they'll say stuff like that.
It's weird.
Yeah. Yeah, they love to, like, think like they have something over you.
So they keep track of every sin.
I mean, they try.
Every little thing.
I mean, there's some exorcists will say that if you go to confession, they don't know your sins. But I've never really come up with that. But the biggest point is, like, who cares what they know? You know, it's like.
No, it kind of shows how stupid it is. Like, rubber pterodactyl.
Exactly, right? That's what you're going to get on me, right? I do way worse things, like, you know.
That's amazing. And have you seen levitation or anything that's like?
Yeah, I've seen every one of those signs. And
when you see that, do you just want to run out of the room? Like, how do you stay cool?
You never. No, I would say I've never felt that way. I always just feel bad for the victim. What you're realizing is,
what does levitation look like?
You crawl up a wall or crawl up onto the ceiling.
Crawl up a wall or on a ceiling?
Yeah. I mean, but what you're see? Okay, so this is the thing, Chris, is that.
Hold on, you crawl up a wall.
Yes, that's happened.
And crawl on a ceiling. You're watching this?
Yeah, like a spider, kind of. And the problem is, like, you would think, like, oh, if I saw this, I would run out of the room scared.
Right, right.
But what you see is, like, this poor body, this poor soul that doesn't want to do this. They're scared. And something's taking them over and making them do that. And you feel pity. That's what you feel. You don't feel scared.
You know? Wow, man.
Yeah.
Okay, one of the comments I often get when I do an interview on something like this is, okay, I believe in the supernatural. Where's the video?
Yeah, well.
Why are there never videos of these things?
Yeah.
I can answer, but I like.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of reasons.
The obvious answer.
Yeah, like, yeah, there's a lot of reasons. First of all, it's like, this is a pretty sensitive moment in a person's life. Exorcism is not, it's not something that we would be like, hey, can we video you so that everyone could see this, right?
This is kind of cool.
Right, exactly, right. Yeah, it's not that kind of thing. Second of all, I mean, you know how the internet is. Like, it would cut out any of the prayer, any of the grace, and it would just show the evil, right? They would do whatever they could to do that kind of thing. Yeah. But third of all, there's a certain amount of anonymity that comes with most ministries. Not every. Some exorcists are pretty public, but most ministries are pretty anonymous, and that's important, too.
So you said the person's will is involved in the process, or it's mainly the person, not just the priest, right?
Yeah, I would say it's mainly the person.
What's that? How does that translate? What, like, what's the moment at which they win, and what's victory consist of?
I would kind of like liken it to, like, if they're drowning, right? And what the exorcist is doing is just kind of pushing them up, weakening the demons, right? And at that moment that they can get their head above water and say, I don't want this anymore, right? When they say, I want to cooperate with what they're doing, then they'll start cooperating with the prayers that we're saying, right? And so in a certain sense, what you're doing is you're weakening the demon so that they can have a little bit of breathing time to cooperate with the grace in their life. So you'll see oftentimes exorcists will do an exorcism, and then they'll say, all right, everyone leave the room. I'm going to hear their confession. Because the demons are weak enough that they can't stop their confession at that point.
Wow.
Or they'll give them communion at that point, right? And they'll do that because the demons are weak enough. And so, yeah, I mean, the person is what it's all about, right? It's about them coming to know Jesus Christ, which is the most difficult part of the ministry, because you can't force that, right? I mean, they have to come to accept him, you know?
I've heard Father Ripperger said the devil's on a short leash.
Yeah, right. Padre Pio said that too.
Padre Pio did. Okay, there you go. So they only do what the Lord allows for our good, which is their greatest punishment, because they know that.
Yeah, right.
At the end of the day, they're serving our sanctification and the glory of God.
Right.
So these people who were Satanists would have died Satanists had the Lord not said, go ahead, possess him.
Yeah.
Because then he's on his road to me.
And then and then you're going to see the power of the priesthood there. You know.
Yeah, and there's a great witness about every trial in life when you think about that context.
Oh, yeah,
God will allow this for a time for my greater glory and the person to be perfected. How have you seen that in these people? Because you were friends with them. They come over for dinner.
Oh, yeah.
You work through this with them. Are you friends with them after? You stay in touch?
Oh, yeah. Like, I try my very best to do that.
What good does this experience bring out of a person? Like,
yeah.
How are their personalities 10 years later? Are there stellar qualities these people have that other people don't have?
Yeah. A lot of times they operate on a higher level of spiritual sense. So a lot of times they have mystical gifts too as well.
Really?
Yeah. A lot of times at the end
you see what?
They see angels and things like that a lot of times. You know, you'll see things like that.
So these are like mystics walking around.
A little bit, yeah. Yeah, a little bit. If they cooperate fully, a lot of them will have PTSD for the rest of their life because they're afraid of what happened, you know, before.
Yeah, yeah.
But many of them, like, you know, they're very holy people and they've functioned perfectly in everyday life and they you know, will be wonderful Catholics. What you see a lot, oftentimes, as I found, is that religious vocations come out of those families.
Really?
Yeah, it's kind of like almost like God uses that merit to bring about vocations, yeah. Especially like house infestations. I've seen that on numerous occasions.
What's a house infestation?
A house infestation is when a demon, or usually a group of demons, takes over like a place. An infestation is what we would say a possession of a place, an object, or an animal.
An animal?
Yeah, it happens. Believe it or not. Everyone here is like, I knew that dog was possessed, like right?
I'm thinking cat. It's always cats. Anyway, but is it...
Yeah, it happened. It happens.
An animal.
Yeah, it happens.
How do you even know? What's the manifestation when an animal is possessed? What do you bring? Do you just put it to sleep or bring it in for an exorcism? What do you do? Is there a doggy exorcism?
There's some conjecture there.
Yeah,
but yeah. I don't. It's above my pay grade to weigh in. But what I'd say is that they do weird things. Like there was one time where I was at a house infestation and the cat was obviously infested, and every time we would light like a blessed candle, he would go and burn his paw over the candle. Like, it was this bizarre
situation. That's really weird, man.
Yeah, it was very weird. Yeah, yeah. Strange stuff like that.
Okay, so you see, what do you see in a house that's infested? And then how do you get things out? You just go say the prayers there?
Yeah, well, demons always operate based on rights, right? They're very legalistic. And so they would have some right to be there extraordinarily. So usually either like heinous sin happened in the house, or maybe someone wanted them to be there, like, you know, if the coven lived in the house or something like that. Mm. Abortion clinics, the big commonplace, clubs like that, commonplace. And what will happen is usually it'll be calm, right? And then a Catholic family will move in. And all of a sudden they're praying in the house and they're reading the Bible in the house. And the demons are like, what the heck? This is our house. We don't like it. And so they'll start to manifest. It might be black shadows. It might be... it might be infestations like bugs. It could be, well, it's going to be a lot of things at one time. Oftentimes, everyone in the house will have the same demonic dreams at night. Mostly desecration of the sacred. So just recently, I was at a house case, and his family had moved from Venezuela, and every time they came home, their Mary statue was in the toilet. And they were like, what the heck, you know? So they put up cameras, couldn't find anything. Every time they come home, the Mary statue was in the toilet. Finally, they called church.
They didn't see anything happening in the camera? It would just happened.
Just happened. Yeah. And so finally we went there and we found out the lady was really sick when she was little, and they did some kind of ritual on her throat where they would cut these knots off her throat for 7 days. And she still had that bracelet in the, or that necklace in the house. And we were like, what is this? You know, and she told us, and we were like, can we get rid of it? And she said, yeah, right away.
So it all stopped.
Yeah, it all stopped.
Wow.
Yeah.
Tell me more about how this has reinforced your love for the priesthood.
Yeah.
The hands of the priest, what the power there.
I mean, if you
the
saw
the demons
saw,
in the face
you, yeah.
of priests.
I mean, if you saw the priest who I most recently have assisted,
yeah.
there's no one on earth that would be intimidated by this guy. Like, he looks like a big potato, basically. and he sounds always like he's falling asleep. Like, even during the ritual, he's like, the power of Christ compels you. And you're like, Father, could we get a little
emotion,
a little drama
a little
here? You know, right, right. But it doesn't matter, right? Because the demons see Jesus, right? They see when they put that stole on, they see Jesus, and they are terrified of these priests, right?
Awesome.
Yeah, absolutely terrified. And yeah, you know, I remember one time I thought I was going to jail for sure. We went to this case. It was a lady. We had to go to her house because we couldn't get her out of the house. But I was outside. I pulled up late, and so the priests were walking up to the door. And as soon as the priest walked in, she jumped out the third story window, landed right on my car, and she was like this. And I thought, oh my gosh, we're gonna go to jail. Like, she's dead, you know. She was fine, perfectly fine. But she jumped out a third story window to get away from the priest. Yeah, I mean that's demons are so terrified, and it's not because of exorcism. It's because of confession and the mass. Right? They're
wow.
terrified of yeah, confession.
Oh,
and the mass,
man.
Yeah. Remember one time this demon. And I don't like to say things that they say because it's really not proper, but remember this lesson we were kind of learning. He said that an average parish priest, he hates him so much because he'll steal hundreds of thousands of souls in the confessional. Hundreds of thousands of souls in the confessional. An average parish priest.
Steal it from the demon.
From the demon. And you think, like, how many priests, like, I mean, they probably go in and they're like, oh, I got to go get confession over with, right? Or maybe not. Hopefully
yeah,
they're
no,
not.
No, seriously.
Like
it's a good
yeah.
reminder for
yeah.
any priest who's watching what,
right.
what you're doing.
Right.
How powerful it is.
Yeah, right, right. Yeah. Yeah. So it's, I mean, it's the power of the priest. And then the power of Our Lady in particular.
Of Our Lady?
Like, I literally can't say enough about, like, when people say something demonic happens, I'm like, double down on everything, Mary.
Why? Never. Why? What have
because
you seen
she,
in that regard?
She's been guaranteed her role in every spiritual battle, and I've seen over and over again the power that she exacts over the world of evil is unbelievable. And I'll give you an example. This one case who I knew for years, she was the one who lived with us. She actually just passed away just recently.
God bless her.
Yeah, yeah. And she, you know, she was to the point where if you said the word Mary or if you said the word priest, she would immediately, the demons would take over. They would try to kill you. So you had to, literally when I started evangelizing her, I used to have to say, oh, can I tell you about the person who loves me the most? That's how I had started to try to evangelize her, right? And
wow.
got to the point where she was, like, doing well, but she just could not get free, you know? And so we were teaching her about Mary. And finally, one day, the exorcist kind of got frustrated, and he said, like, Mother Mary, please, when are you going to have mercy on this poor girl? And all of a sudden, she just started screaming. I mean, just bloody, you know, it's preternatural. You could tell from
yeah.
the screams. She turned around.
They sound inherently different?
Yeah, absolutely.
How?
I mean, it would be like if you were like a movie producer and you're like, I want it to sound like hell is screaming. That's like what it kind of sounds
like. Like multiple voices?
Yeah, or? That kind of thing, yeah. Wow. And she turned around and she started screaming and then stopped. And the exorcist said, what are you seeing? And she said, there's a lady in white coming. And he said, this is the woman we've told you about. This is Mary. Greet her. And she got down on her knees. She prayed the rosary. And there was just this peace in the room. She prayed the Hail Mary.
Man, that's beautiful.
This priest in the room. And he said to her, are they gone? And she said, they want to leave, but she won't let them. And we were like, what? And he said, what do you mean? What's happening? And she said, she's making each of the demons get down on their face and pray a glory be to the
get
baby
here,
in
man.
Her arms before they leave. It was like she was punishing them like a mama bear, you know, like that's what she's like. It was just, and it was incredible, like this peace in the room. And you see this often. I would say like it, in a case of real possession, you see Mary intervene quite often.
I didn't expect to cry about the beauty of faith during questions about an exorcism.
I know.
That's incredible, man.
But there was even, you know, one case, and again, you got me on my topic now, Mary and evil, so I can't stop talking about it. But there's a case that people were talking about that was terrible, and I had only heard about it, but I'd gone to the conferences, and people would say, like, have you seen this guy, you know? Showed all the signs of possession, see the things you see in the movies, all that kind of stuff. And he had gone to like 12 different exorcists, couldn't get help. One day this priest called me and said, hey, I want, you know this guy that everybody's talking about? I was like, yeah, I heard about him. Is it real? And he said, yes. He said, I think he should come talk to you. And I was like, no, don't send him up here. Like,
yeah,
I don't want that guy up here. You know, like,
yeah.
I wasn't even working with a team at the time. So I didn't have any help for him. And he said, no, I really feel like we've been praying and he should come up and talk to you. And I was like, please do not send him here. And the priest was like, yeah, he's going to come up and talk to you. And he like,
oh, man.
So it happened to be the day that I was starting my renewal of my Marian consecration.
Wow.
So it was 33 days before the Immaculate Conception.
Wow.
And I like said to the guy, like, he seemed nice. Like, nothing happened when we met. There was no manifestation. I thought, this can't be the guy everyone's talking about.
Wow.
So I said, I'm like, look, I'm sorry he sent you here. I don't do deliverance prayer really often. I don't feel comfortable doing it, like, liability-wise. I was like, if you want, every day I'm going to do these prayers to renew my Marian consecration. Have you ever done that? And he said, no. I said, well, why don't you do that? He said, okay. So every day he'd come. He'd get a little uncomfortable every once in a while, and I'd hold his hand. You know, he'd sit on the couch next to me, and we'd pray the rosary, and he'd be fine. And I would think to myself, there's no way this is the guy that everyone described. Like, it can't be. So the day for consecration came, and he sat down on the couch next to me, and I heard him kind of a growl slash laugh. And I thought, oh, I've heard that before.
Yeah.
And he turned to me, and I could see, like, just his eyes had rolled back into his head. And he laughed, like, a deep guttural laugh. And I was like, okay, this is it. Like, I'm going to go get my priest and get him out of here, you know. And he said, you sneaky SOB. He said, you could have had one of your priest friends come at me from the front. But instead, you introduced him to her. She closed my eyes, closed my ears, bound my hands and feet. And now I can do nothing, and he's hers. And then he rolled his eyes back. He made the consecration. He was fine.
So, a full exorcism basically just happened with the consecration prayer.
And he had had exorcism after exorcism, and they did not help.
You got it.
But it was the consecration prayer. It's amazing, right? It's amazing. Yeah, like, incredible. Our Lady.
That's epic.
Our Lady, and that's why I get the sense, like my brothers used to watch WWF when they were little. I was never into it, but, you know, there's the tag team, and the guy's like, come on. Like, I get the sense that Our Lady's like, please, come on, let me in. Let me into these battles that you have. And I think so often, like, they're like, well, no, this is a real battle. This is alcoholism or pornography or divorce or something like that. And they're like, we'll save the sweet battles for you, Mary. It's like, baloney. Yeah. She wants to crush the head of the serpent in your life.
Amen.
You know, she wants to come in.
These are great moments that make you like super unapologetically not just Christian but specifically Catholic,
right?
You know, it's I mean, yeah, people will make mock priests and overlook Our Lady until it comes to this,
right?
When you no longer can,
right?
Which consecration prayer do you pray to Our Lady every day?
My mind, my heart, you know, St. Louis de Montfort.
That's the same one I use. We'll link to it below this video.
Yeah.
But it's a beautiful, I mean, it's all about Jesus. I entrust myself to Mary's hands and say, Mary, give me to Jesus today.
Yeah, I actually.
Be a spiritual mom. I'm going to take all the help I can get.
Yeah, I actually, when I stepped away from exorcism, I actually thought, I'm going to start a nonprofit just carrying on St. Maximilian Kolbe's work of promoting Marian consecration.
Yeah.
Because I ended up reading like all his writings that are translated, and it took me 2 years. And I'm telling you, like, over and over and over again, it's like he indoctrinated me, right? It was like, he was like, look, if we want the Lord to come back, which we do, the Immaculate Heart must triumph, you know? And he over and over again, like, recommends Marian consecration as an answer to the world's ills. And I've seen it happen, right? And I've seen how powerful it is. So, yeah, that's probably going to be my next step in life.
Well, praise God. Yeah. Okay, we'll pray that happens.
Yeah.
And get behind it any way I can.
Yeah,
let us know, man. Okay, so without getting overly obsessed about the demonic, or weird about it and over spiritualizing everything,
right?
How does the average layperson engage spiritual combat? Because this is a part of the spiritual life,
yeah,
that without obsessing, we also shouldn't underestimate recognize that this is also a reality. So I think your sack of potatoes exorcist friend is like, just pray the prayers, dude, and then move on with your day.
Right.
What's that look like for a dad who has spiritual authority over his home? Right. What's it look like for every Christian?
Yeah, absolutely.
How do we do it?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is we understand, like, first of all, the devil is real, personal. He's defeated, already defeated on the cross, right? And that these little battles that we see in our everyday life are just a matter of us subjecting, like, God's grace to our everyday life, right? And so I think for, like, keep it in perspective that Satan doesn't have more power than – we tend to give him a lot more power than often, especially if you're super interested in spiritual warfare, right?
Yeah, don't obsess.
You give him a lot of power that he does not have. The second thing I would say is, like, yeah, of course, we should assume the devil has a plan for your life to draw you away from God. That plan is usually very gradual and slow, right? It's usually very, like, mundane. He wants you to get you through small little addictions and things like that. And so we should, of course, acknowledge his presence and fight against him. But I think the biggest, like, concern is, like, we don't want to see him around every corner and give him more power than what he has. And this is, I feel like we're seeing a little bit of that today, a little bit. Like, there's a little bit of a resurgence. Of people like just like, oh, the devil, you know, I dropped my cell phone, it must be the devil. Something like that, right? I would not give him more power than he has.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, we want to be careful with that. But as far as a father goes, right, parents are very important in the spiritual authority aspect, okay? And so, blessing our children, blessing our homes,
How do you do that? What's it literally look like?
For me, I literally just put my hand, I make the sign of the cross on their forehead.
Beautiful.
Yeah, just that. And but I also say this, okay, and this is really important, because everybody's looking for, like, what's the special prayer I can pray for this? If you think about St. Philip Neri, right, these kids would come off the street and they'd have demonic things going on, and what would he do? He would hug them. He would hold them to his heart, right? Hugs are exorcistic. Love is exorcistic.
Wow, dude.
Truth is exorcistic. And so what I found is that, like,
just make the devil uncomfortable.
Right. What I have found is that, like, truth and love are the first foundations of, like, having a freedom, a liberated home, you know? Wow. And so, yeah, to remember that, that's important.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And then how about prayers? What prayers do you pray when you want, like, you sense that maybe there's a demonic element of the struggle I'm dealing with right now?
Yeah, I pray the Psalms, and then I pray what we would call a deprecatory prayer that I make up on my own. So I pray the Psalms a lot.
Okay, what does deprecatory mean?
It means it's directed towards God. So I'm saying, God, please heal this situation. Please do something about this, as opposed to saying, hey, demon, get out of here, right? That would be imprecatory.
And Why don't you do that? I do those. I sometimes say, like, if there's a spirit of X,
I
command you to go to the foot of the cross and leave me alone.
Yeah, I don't know. I never, I think, like, probably I used to do it, but, like, I used to see that it can be overused, right? Like, in certain situations. And so, like, I kind of faded away from that. But very often, like, if someone comes to me for deliverance prayer, I never say anything confrontational. I will hold their hand and I will pray the rosary. That's it. And I will not do anything.
It does the job.
Yeah, right. It does the job.
That's really awesome.
Right.
Yeah.
But Psalms, I use Psalms a lot, right?
Like, the evil one hates the Psalms.
Oh, he despises the Psalms.
Why?
Right? Yeah. There's a few reasons, okay? First of all, the Psalms are all praises of God, right?
Yeah.
Second of all,
because I've heard there's an exorcistic power to Psalms.
There is, right. And don't forget, like, David and Solomon both were known exorcists, okay? So David would play his harp and Saul would be cured of that demon. Do you remember this, okay?
That is a cool thought.
Yeah, and Solomon was known all over the world for his gift of exorcism. Not just wisdom, but for his gift of exorcism.
Wow.
Yeah, it was known all over the world for his gift of exorcism. So those were all written by them, you know? And, well, you know, some of them were.
Wow.
So they have that exorcistic power. Besides the fact that they're prayed in monasteries over and over and over again, which is where the devil's defeated completely. Wow.
And Jesus prayed them.
Yeah, right. Jesus prayed the Psalms.
So a lot of the spiritual battle is about opening your windows, putting the fan on, and blowing in fresh air so that the dank air just doesn't have any room in
there
anymore.
Of course. And that's a big thing for, to be honest with you, it's very common for someone who's having real spiritual disturbances. So I'm not saying they're possessed, but they could be, okay? And they'll say something like this. I'll say, were you baptized? And they'll say, yeah, I was baptized, but then when I was 16, I did this, and I unbaptized myself, okay? And I'll say to them, oh, I'm sorry that someone told you the wrong thing, but, you know, you can't unbaptize yourself. It's not possible.
Yeah.
Like, you're baptized now, And all you have to do is just say, God, because I'm baptized, I want to come back to you. Do you know, oftentimes that's enough for them to be freed, right? Wow. Just that anchor of truth that they can hold on to.
Wow.
Is just enough for them to be free.
How amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
And the beauty of the battles that you've seen and engaged in for a time in your life is that it brings to front and center how important the basics of spiritual life are.
Absolutely.
And this is not just about a feel-good thing. This is a battle between heaven and hell
over people's souls. Old-school spirituality, right?
Yep.
Saints, angels, fasting, prayer.
Get serious about it.
Yeah.
Especially mom and dad with your spiritual authority.
Yeah, right.
Where do people find out more about your ministry and about this, where they can learn more from you about all this?
Yeah, I travel around to speak about it. If you want to take a look at my calendar, it's thecatholictruthaboutangelsanddemons.com.
Awesome.
And I'd love to have you part of the community.
And you got a podcast and about this stuff?
No, it's a podcast about evangelization.
Or that's Patreon about this. Like, what
else? Yeah. You can find all that through the Catholic Truth About Angels and Demons.com. You can find it all.
Brother, thank you for being on. I just love being with you. And wow. Praise God. I love you guys. Take this stuff seriously. Say your prayers, fast, rosaries, all this stuff. There's a lot that depends on you being holy, on you being saint. Insert your name here. And we're honored to help you be that saint. God bless you guys. See you next time.